Charmed Life, a radio show discussing spirituality, magic, and the unconditional love of the universe. Thanks for tuning in.
And I am your host, Trisha Carr. Welcome to today's episode. I'm really interested in everything we're going to talk about today. I think it's going to be a lot of fun and very illuminating. And before I welcome onto the show my very special guest, allow me to just share a couple of things with you. My website is trishacarcharm.com, trishacarcharm.com. You can find it in the description. However you're listening or watching, you can watch it on YouTube, youtube.com/trishacarr. And then, of course, the podcast, Charmed Life with Trisha Carr, however you get your podcasts. If you check out my website and join my newsletter, I am offering some special little treats there through my newsletter only. So I would love it if you would just go to my website. That's where you'll find all my offerings too, my one-on-one services, the programs that I have coming up. And if you join the newsletter, then you'll be able to stay in touch. So I want to welcome you there to join me in that arena. And without further delay, I have a special guest today. She is an author and educator. Her name is Della Reside. She's the founder of Cellular Consciousness Healing, which helps people to release what has been holding them back and allowing them to shift their mindset, increase their self-awareness, and manifest an abundant, vibrant life. Welcome, Della.
Thank you. Welcome to you.
I love the combination of the intellect and the spirit and the feeling. That's like you speak right to me with that. So I have so many questions because I don't know. I mean, I know about the chakras. I use the chakra system so beautiful and so helpful, but I'm really interested in hearing what you have to say about cellular consciousness because that sounds a lot to me like quantum consciousness in a way. And before we dive into all of that stuff, why don't you tell everyone how you got into this? Like, what is your journey? What is the work and the journey? How did you get there to what you're doing now?
Wow. Well, it's a long story, but I guess I'll start about 15 years ago. My parents passed away 19 days apart.
Oh my goodness.
And I had to find ways to cope. Mm. And so I started reading everything I could, you know, kind of the self-help stuff, got into working with angels, mm-hmm. energy work. I worked with a lady while I was going through that as well. Mm-hmm. And I found a book by Dr. Barbara Brennan, Hands of Light. Mm-hmm. And I read it literally from front to back and I was hooked. And I got her next book. And at that time I had to get them from the library because we didn't have the access that we do now. Yeah. So I got her book and in the back of it, I saw she had a school. Mm. So I signed up for the first year of school, and 6 years later, I graduated from the advanced program. I just found, I had worked in immunology for like 25 years. I had, a scientific degree from before that. And I really found my life was shifting. That was kind of the turning point for me. I realized that there was more to life, and I wanted to explore it. So that's when my scientific background and my healing background kind of started combining and got me to where I am today.
Wow, that's what a powerful story. I'm actually I'm teaching a mediumship class right now, a 6-week program. And that's something I just spoke with them about day before yesterday. I popped in, we do it in a group, is how we always hold these. And I told everyone, you know, people are sharing their stories and, you know, my mother passed and this and that. And I just said, you know, it's just a very common way for us to open up to spirit more when we have loss. And certainly losing your parents is just about as profound a loss, because, you know, and it may be, even if you were, it sounds like you were very close to your parents, and even if you kind of aren't, it's still, there's the, which goes right into what we're going to talk about, I think, but the energy that is contained in the intention, where that intention is expressed by DNA and blood or by energy. So if it's your adoptive parents or if it's your biological parents, that it takes a part of you that was expressed in physical and it moves it up to the awareness of spirit. And so we just like, but you know what I mean? Like we just now our awareness is there regardless of whatever we had been experiencing before in our consciousness. That's what I, for me, all of my openings, metaphysically speaking, had to do with loss. They just did. They had to do with, like, my bird died, my cat died, then my best friend's mother-in-law died, which I wasn't, like, close to her, but it was just through those energy lines of love that it opened me up.
I agree. And that's what I find for me too, is that it got me to realize, and maybe it was always there, but that part of my life got me to realize that I could stay connected.
Yes.
Even though they were in a different space.
Yes.
And so, like you said, it opened me up as well.
Because what can be really so beautiful about death is that it turns you into your own heart to be able to maintain the relationship or to understand how to continue the relationship in the way that it now. And that's just so beautiful.
Exactly.
That's amazing. Well, thank you for sharing that. And I'm so sorry for your loss. How profound.
Yeah.
So cellular consciousness, I mean, what you're reminding me about, I mean, is epigenetics too. Like, you know, tell us about cellular consciousness and how you developed this.
I did. Well, I guess it's kind of a gift, but I'm kind of a quantum physics nerd too.
Love it. Yes.
So what I found was in about my third year of training, I started seeing things. Mm-hmm. And I found that when I saw things in people's bodies, I could actually start connecting with that energy. Mm. So do you want me to tell you kind of what cellular consciousness is?
Whip it out. Okay. Whatever you got.
Okay. Okay. So the way I describe it is cellular consciousness is emotions, trauma, stuck experiences that we're holding on to in our energetic field and our chakras that we may or may not be cognitively aware of. Mm. Okay. And what happens is as we go through life, and I talk with my hands, as you see, as we go through life, we have experiences. Mm-hmm. And let's say something happens to you when you're 3 and you're not able to fully express it. Either you don't have the words, the verbal capacity. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's not safe to do so. Mm-hmm. Maybe you just don't know how. So you bottle it up. Right. Mm-hmm. And then something happens again when you're 8. That's similar to that. It may or may not be traumatic. It may be something someone says to you at school. Mm-hmm. You also don't know how to deal with that. So you kind of bottle that up and you start layering it. Right. Mm-hmm. So then what happens is over time, if we keep doing this, we tend to hold it in certain areas of our body.
Yeah.
And what happens is if it's held in a chakra, it affects the expression of that chakra.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So for instance, if it's held in your solar chakra, it could affect your self-confidence, how you put yourself out there in the world, mm-hmm. Even your self-care. So the cellular consciousness aspect is tapping into each of these pieces of, let's say, these emotions, these traumas that are frozen in time, and releasing them. So when I do that, when I work with clients, I actually tap into, like, let's say that 8-year-old, and I have that conversation with that 8-year-old part of a person and get that energy to release. And then we go back and we do the same thing with the 3-year-old. Mm. So that's what the cellular consciousness is literally all these frozen pieces of time that we have been unable to express in our lives, and even goes into past lives. Mm-hmm.
That's a powerful work. I do that, you know, as well. I think it's, you know, what healing work really has to be is nurturing and freeing and healing and giving the love to that inner child. Because she still exists.
Yes.
And she still needs to be heard. And that's why there would be I'm a hypnotherapist. I'm in hypnotherapist training at a school called Hypnosis Motivation Institute. And a model that we use, which is very much in alignment with the chakra model, is body syndromes. And so we kind of look at the body, the symptoms in five different areas along the body there. And again, they all relate to, it is a model of the chakra system as well. And so if there is something going on with the, let's say the pancreas, you know what I mean? Because that's right there in that area, obviously, where the solar plexus is.
Exactly.
And there is probably a 3-year-old or an 8-year-old, like you say, who's had her spirit broken and her will broken at some time. At least that was her perception, because children are so fragile too. This is the thing too, is that I think sometimes people who had pretty balanced, you know, respectively speaking, you know, not necessarily outwardly very traumatic, that they think that they don't have, unfortunately, they get overlooked because they're like, well, my parents were great. And it's like, yeah, of course they are, as humans go. But unfortunately, we're still human. And so they couldn't possibly be perfect for you. And there's still, everyone has trauma. And it's not just your parents, it's society, it's peers, it's siblings, even though they were doing the best they could as children. But that, you know, trauma is perceived by that fragile child. And she will get what she needs. If that 8-year-old with the broken will didn't get what she needs, she will manifest pancreatitis. You know what I mean? Like, because she needs it. And the subconscious mind.
You are
mind,
exactly right.
I'm preaching. Yes. Go ahead. You go for it. I'm excited.
I fully agree with you. Mm-hmm. I fully agree with you, because what will happen, you're exactly right, is eventually it will cause illness. Mm-hmm. It will cause recurring patterns in your life that you can't break free of, because that piece of you, that 8-year-old, wants that attention.
Needs it.
That attention.
Needs and to be known. You know, animals, I'm sorry to interrupt, but animals are, because I work with animals. I'm an animal communicator.
Yes, I know that.
And they're like all subconscious mind. They're all integrated. And when animals are bringing trauma in and they are showing it, then it, let's say, for example, an animal who was rehomed and they're showing trauma to their new family, and an animal communicator, what I can do is go in and find out, let's say there was a cat and he was kicked and he's well, he's okay now. It didn't like damage him permanently, but he's getting a bad hip situation. If he shows me the story of how he got kicked in this other experience in his previous, you know, human arrangement, and then it's understood and there's compassion and understanding by his new guardians, then it's poof, gone like that. Like they heal like that. They're just saying, this is what happened. And I'm just saying, it ain't happening again, right? And we're like, yeah. And when they can feel us feeling it. And we're the same way. We just have animals are conscious of it and they're trying to show it to us the best way that we can possibly understand them, because like a child who doesn't have verbal language trying to speak with humans who only use verbal language anymore. They don't use their telepathy or their telepathy. And so anyway, I think it's really cool. I'm like vibing on it and like want to take it into my work with animals even more, what you're talking about.
It is. And like you said, is exactly the same with humans. I don't have to do anything when I connect with that energy. Mm-hmm. The simple fact of understanding it and almost giving it a voice helps it release.
Right.
And that's people, what I find.
Exactly. And that's kind of, that's the end of the work. And I think it's great for us to talk about this, because I think sometimes people think that if they go to do healing work that they're going to be injured, because they're going to be looking at the stuff that they, the nightmares that they have of what has occurred,
that they're going to have to relive it. And they,
that's
they
not
don't.
It. That's not this practice. That's, I think that is something that happened in some cognitive behavioral therapy, especially in the 70s. There was a lot of that business going on where they were re-injuring people by talking about it for so long.
Yes.
But that's not what this healing work is about. So speak to that. Would you please?
Because what I find too, is when I work with the clients and I'll see things in there or interact with these pieces of consciousness that, like the 8-year-old I was talking about. When I do that, I lost my train of thought now. I can't remember.
We were talking about releasing it by just allowing it the space. And then when you go in and see that in someone's consciousness, and that 8-year-old, there she is, really just giving it space is kind of the end of the work, right? I think people think that they're going to be injured. But the thing is, they're already at a state of injury. And the second that you shine light on it. Yeah, go ahead.
That's right. Sorry, it just came back to me. When my face popped up on the thing.
You're like, who's that?
I know, it confused me. But yes, when you connect with that piece and help, you don't have to do anything to it, right?
Yeah.
And that little person just wants to be heard.
Yeah.
That's what I find.
So she can be understood, have compassion, and then know that it's not going to happen again, integrating those parts
exactly.
of yourself. Yeah.
So with my clients, even though I may see and interact with the 8-year-old, I can't always tell them after, let's say, everything I've seen and done, because what I find is sometimes then they recycle it in their mind because the mind is very powerful. So as a healer, we can go in and connect with this energy and help it release without having to know the story behind it.
Right.
And sometimes when people get caught in the story, they're actually recycling that energy. And instead, you just want to release it. You want to give it that freedom.
And that's why I think sometimes, like, past life, as we would call it, quote unquote past, because there is no time, it doesn't have to be linear. But that's how it can be helpful, because it's a symbol that is highlighting the underlying energy. And sometimes we just, like, see the child, and it doesn't have to be a literal memory. And
exactly.
It's often, sometimes it's safer, and that's okay, because if we are repressing a memory of an actual event, the mind is taking care of itself. It's like putting, like, when you have a scab over an injury, over a cut, it's there for a reason. We want to pull that scab off. It's doing its job.
I agree.
And so, but if we can, if you have something else, so again, like, that's a gentle way that healers work with healing, is that it isn't about, like, ripping off the scab and getting in there or creating more injury. As soon as you shine light on it, it gets better. It starts to get better as soon as we get air around it. And so what do your sessions look like, or what is the work? I mean, in a practical, you know, the practical sense, how is it laid out? What kind of, how does it, walk me through that?
Well, what I found is I used to do in-person work and I stopped doing that. So now I work remotely. And what I find I do is I connect with my client and I go, the way I describe it to them is I go into a deep state of, like, almost a deep meditative state.
Yeah.
And I connect with them. And when I do that, I'm able to literally, depending on what they came to me for, I use the chakras as a gateway to go deeper. And then when I'm deeper into the chakras, these pieces of consciousness literally just appear to me. Part of my training from Barbara Brennan, Barbara Brennan School of Healing, part of the training is to actually repair the chakras and fix them. So in addition to working with the consciousness and having these verbal conversations, I do the repair work if there's actual damage to the chakra as well.
So then
I do all of that, and then I close the session and call the client back, and we have a discussion at the end about, you know, what showed up, how it's affecting their life, what they can do moving forward. So that's kind of the breakdown of a session.
And do the clients set intentions in advance, or do you just go in without any prior, you know, discussion, is there to intention anything specific, or is it just for them to be open and heal generally?
Well, it depends. Some people come to be open and healed, but I'd say like 98% of them come with an intention.
Good. Yeah.
You know, they come with an intention. We have a brief discussion before I start the session.
Okay.
I always check, you know, what would you like me to work on? What are you looking for help with and stuff? So that kind of gives me indication of where to even look in their body, because the body on the level I go is very, very deep. So for me to do a general body scan is fine, but to help them with specific things, I kind of need to know which area of the body I'm going to.
Right.
So yeah, they set the intention.
And it also is reminding me of theta healing. And theta healing, we go into the deep state, which is expressed in by our brains as the theta brainwave activity. And so that kind of trance, are you familiar with that? Does that, is that something that you're aware of?
I've heard of it, but I'm actually not familiar with it. So I can't, but yeah, that sounds like what I do, but yeah.
And when we're doing that kind of work, as you're talking, because you're having the discussion, you're going in and you're looking at the chakras and having the pieces of consciousness show up, healing it. And that's actually in, because when we're doing it as we're discussing it, that's called the alpha theta crossover. So that's what intuitives tend to do, or healers do. We're going so deep, pulling things up and come up to alpha, which is a lighter trance. So we can actually be a bit cognitive and discuss it. But it's still at the end,
interesting.
Right? You don't remember anything from your sessions almost ever, right?
No.
Yeah,
no.
because there is amnesia there, because we're not using the part of the mind, the conscious part that is mapping things literally and everything, you know, so. Yeah.
Exactly. And when I'm done a session, I usually feel like I've traveled, I don't know, lifetimes and dimensions. And it's very hard to describe.
Right. Yeah. I feel you. I know all about it.
Yeah.
And some people take, which is, I think, a legitimate, people take substances, mushrooms or ayahuasca to kind of have the experiences that we're describing.
I think so. And
I think it's valid. I definitely wouldn't say that people shouldn't do that, because it's a very deep part of some people's spiritual journey. But for me, it's not, because for me, I'm already doing that.
I agree.
And I don't think, I'm not saying one's better than the other. Certainly it's more sustainable to be able to do it without any aid, because you can't do mushrooms every day. I don't think anybody would ever do mushrooms every day. That would be insane. Can you imagine? To have that training, to be able to just get into that is so powerful. So let's talk about your personal practice, like meditation and everything, because I think that is the cornerstone for the life. Yes,
I agree. And I find when I skip my meditations, I feel it.
I
feel it physically. I feel it mentally. I have to confess, I'm not perfect, but I try to do my meditations every day. I definitely, before I do a session, I take time to get grounded, set the space and all of that. So meditation is a huge part of what I do. I don't practice just one type of meditation. I like to wing it. Mm-hmm. Some days I do one type of meditation. I can meditate for half an hour or more. The next day I find it tough squeezing in 5 minutes. So I do something that is more suitable to that. But I really think the consistency of doing something is really important for everyone.
Yeah, I agree. Consistency. Because are going to the truth of who you are, going to your inner being, or making contact with spirit, whatever perspective you're taking in on that.
Yes.
And so it is definitely, it is the cornerstone. A lot of people that come to this, I didn't even know that I was meditating, honestly, when I first started this journey, metaphysical journey. I was looking to heal my wrong side out empathic nature. And I had a coach who was walking me through, actually, the sessions that we would do were chakra questioning. And she was like, you don't have to know anything about chakras. I'm just going to say the name of it and tell you basically where it's located and have you just put your awareness there. And it was really awesome. I didn't have to study chakras. She's like, so the top of your head, feel that. And, its color, I think she may have given me its color. And then we would just ask it questions. And then after that, I was hooked, because I was like, I need to do that again. And I was not necessarily looking at the chakras every day.
Yeah.
But I find that to be a very powerful practice, a self-practice.
It is. And what I teach people in my workshops and stuff is I teach them how to do that with their cellular consciousness. Mm. So if they have a part of their body that's maybe where they have chronic pain or tightness, or maybe like I was talking about before, recurring behaviors, I'll get them to tap, do the same thing as you just described with that area of their body. And I'll get them to go in and connect with the consciousness that's there and have that conversation.
Yeah.
Because I think that's as powerful or even more powerful than me doing it for them.
Definitely. And I think it is important because we have this thing that we tend to want to reject the pain and reject the part. That's the ego, because the ego is terrified of pain and
right.
and wants to it, the ego or the, you know, the physically oriented mind thinks that it needs to get angry and run away from something. It gets in fight or flight, essentially. Yeah. But if we reject the part of the body, then that's just going to make it chronic then or prolong the healing. Yeah. We actually have to invite it in more deeply, again, like the child who is wounded. You yes. don't reject a child because she's upset and hurt. You bring her in closer and ask her what it is that she needs. And that's what the physical body is showing us. Now I also want to, I feel like highlighting what, you know, when we have this, so far as physical health is concerned, some people have either chronic things going on or let's say genetic, and I'm using air quotes for genetic because epigenetics is showing us that we are not beholden to have the manifestation of diseases that are related to our genetics, that it's how we respond to our genes rather than like some kind of predestination by our genes. And I just feel like taking a moment to acknowledge that this doesn't mean that you're broken. You know, all of us, none of us are going to be at a place where we stop having either physical, you know, challenges or even challenges in the life, because that's a kind of physicality, the events that are in our life. It's always just an invitation. How do you talk about that, you know, to keep people from feeling like they're broken?
Well, the way I describe my beliefs is that there's no such thing as perfect.
Right. There's no such thing as perfectly healed. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here.
Exactly. Yeah. And even for myself, I have celiac disease, which means mm-hmm. I can't eat gluten. Right. Mm-hmm. But I don't consider myself sick.
Right.
It's a way I have to live my life and I choose to live my life. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So anybody who has something like that, or even chronic pain, if it's caused by a physical injury, like a car accident and stuff, it's a little bit different than, you know, something that, you know, is genetic,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't believe there's any right or wrong. I think it's learning how to work with it for you and how to make it work for you and get rid of that judgment.
Yes, absolutely. That judgment is just the place of separation. Whether you're judging yourself or something else, it's just separation. So it's not integration.
Right. And I think people have to get to a place where they accept themselves and they can integrate.
And so you like you said, you worked in a corporate setting in,
yes.
in immunology, and then you transitioned into you actually do work alternative medicine, is that correct? Now, is that, would you call
yes.
some of this, okay, talk about some of the other, I don't know, some of the things that people experience in this work and the growth, and just, you know, what is alternative medicine offering us in general and in the work that you do specifically?
Wow. Well, I personally believe that with like my scientific background, right?
Mm-hmm.
I believe that Western medicine has its place, mm-hmm. and I believe that alternative medicine has its place. But I also believe they can work together.
Yes.
Because that, I mean, for years, that's what I did. I worked in my corporate job and I was training. So mm-hmm. at first I found it difficult to combine the two. But when I let go of trying to do that and just let it happen, it did.
Mm.
So the alternative medicine, I would say, I go back to getting people to trust what's right for them.
Mm.
If they feel like they need something, then they have to trust that. If they feel like they need to, use Western medicine, then they have to trust that. And I think the two can be used at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And people just have to, they have to trust themselves and trust their instincts and what they're feeling about their own health, their own well-being.
I agree.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, no, I just wanted to, I want to talk about it. That's all.
Okay.
Western medicine, and sometimes in our communities of, you know, healing and spirituality, and sometimes we have a hesitation and almost like on the other side, some shame about wanting to use Western medicine. And I think, again, that judgment, it has no place in healing, period.
Certainly.
I actually had, I was almost blind. I was going blind until a year ago. And I had two eye surgeries. I had another eye surgery 2 or 3 years before that. And finally, the sight is all put in alignment. And for a while there, before I did, it's kind of scary to get surgery on your eyes anyway. So I took my time getting.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so I looked into, I did, you know, a quantum healing hypnosis technique session. I did a few sessions to really go into my decision about getting surgery on my eyes. And I didn't really feel judgment or shame. It wasn't that, but I just wanted to give it a lot of awareness before I did it. And I mean, it was awesome. And I really came to the conclusion by doing all of the work that I did around it that I wanted to use this technology. And why not? I use technology every day, and technology is something that's really cool. It's you know, our bodies are technology that our soul is creating all the time. And so that technology was a real shortcut for me to get my vision in alignment. Now, the thing is, I still have some energy I'm working on, because I still get, now I'm starting to get other things around my eyes. I get like skin issues and stuff, which I didn't have when I had the sight issue. So I'm like, okay, right. I hear you, sweetie. You need some more loving in there.
Yeah.
So they were, again, work hand in hand. I used the medicine, which was great and wonderful. And now I'm having to do some of the energy work too. In addition.
Yeah, of course. And you know what? That's exactly what I believe too, is mm-hmm. they each have their place. They can work together. And I think you have to find what works for you, like you did with your eyes, right?
Yeah. Still am doing. And, you know, to bring it into the sphere of animals, my cat, he's been passed for 7 years. And what's kind of amazing, animals are really extensions of us. They're really like extensions of our bodies. Mm. And speaking of how beautiful the transition process is, and what is done, the kind of beautiful, profound work that is done, is that animals, I find, tend to use their transition to transmute a lot of energy for us. So they're having their physical, you know, transition. They're going to go from physical to non-physical. So they bring into their body things that they can move out with them. And so my cat, and this is, again, I want people, when I need people to hear, don't feel guilty about that. It's their honor to be able to do this kind of work. My Aramis, my kitty, one of his symptoms, you know, leading up to his death was blindness. And that was like several years before my blindness started to really come in. And then again, a catalyst for my opening. It's kind of wild how they just are.
Interesting.
The spiritual expression of us as our, you know, as family as we are.
Yes, I'm very close to, we have some animals, and recently lost one. And so I'm very close to them as well. So I can,
They mirror us in the same way that our bodies are mirroring what's going on with us in the mind and in the spirit. So, all right. So you do workshops as well. So what are your workshops like?
My workshops is where I take people literally on a deep dive into their own cellular consciousness.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, they vary in length. People almost, I would say everybody that's attended them they're almost blown away that they have the ability to do that. Mm. But I believe everybody can do it. It's kind of learning how to do it and getting out of your own way. Mm-hmm. And basically believing in yourself. Like they have the ability to listen to their own body. And the more that they get in tune with that, you know, the healthier and happier they'll be. So that's what I do in my workshops. Basically, is I take them on, you know, we do a few warm-up exercises to get them to actually feel energy if they're not familiar with that, if they have no previous experience, you know, with energy movement. Mm-hmm. So we kind of warm up doing that. And then I get them to place, you know, their hands on their body. And then I take them on a deep dive.
Oh, that's great. And so,
yeah, it's very profound.
Like group journeying, like group journeying, and everybody there with the intention, it really magnifies their facility to do it because the intention is contagious and
exactly. Expanding. And I do it with them. Mm-hmm. So then, yeah, as a group consciousness, right?
So yes, so beautiful. Yes. And so how many people tend to, like, what are the different sizes of groups that you work with in these workshops?
I've done, honestly, I've had 2 people and I've had like 50 people.
Mm.
So I find the more people, the deeper the group consciousness is.
Yeah.
But I've also learned how to work, you know, with the smaller groups as well. So I basically hold that group consciousness energy so they get that full experience as well.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And the, what do the journeys look like? Do you play some kind of track or you just lead them in spoken guidance?
I lead them in spoken guidance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And using hands-on. So some of the work you do, like you said, you used to see people in person. So the hands
Correct.
Of light, is that hands-on kind of healing?
For the workshops, you mean?
The workshops, or is that a part of what you have done in your work is actually hands-on healing?
I used to. I don't do that anymore.
Okay.
I did that when I first graduated. I did hands-on, but then now I basically do hands off.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I do it remotely using my mind, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
But when I run the workshops, I like to give people a tangible experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I get them to use their own hands on their own body.
Right.
And even to work with the energy at first, we do some exercises they do some exercises alone, and then I get them to partner up with someone else so they can then feel the energy in relationship to another person.
Mm.
So I like to give them that experience of feeling their own energy, feeling another person's energy, and then I get them to go back deeper into their own body.
Wow, that's really amazing.
Yeah.
You mentioned working with angels, so that was something that you said it was early on in your exploration. And you work?
Yeah.
Do you work? You work with angels? I'm sure you didn't say, "Never mind, angels, I don't need you anymore."
You're funny. Yeah, no kidding. I would say I don't know if I necessarily work with them, but every time I'm doing a session or doing work, I call them in.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So they're more there as my, to back me up
mm-hmm.
now than working with them, I guess is.
Well, yeah. And they don't need any attention. So it's not like I think they are always there.
Yeah.
Sometimes I get that question like, well, how many guys do we have? How do we know who to work with? How do we? And I'm like, I don't know. Mostly I'm walking around and it's just a collective that.
That's exactly what I felt too, you know. And when my mom and dad passed away, I think that gave me a lot of comfort. In fact, I know it gave me a lot of comfort working with them and connecting with them more. And now I find it's like I call in my team.
Yes, exactly. And every now and again, it's like, is there an individual I can focus on? Because I am a human. And you know what I mean? Like sometimes I need to call my husband. Sometimes I need to call my best friend. So is there an individual I can kind of give me an energy I can like tap, you know, hook into to help me to focus on?
Exactly.
And I think they're just standing in front of that team saying, okay, yeah, here we go.
Yeah, here we are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, yeah, exactly.
And so your parents from spirit were working from you from the beginning. So essentially the journey for you, would you say, was like essentially opening up to mediumship through the relationship with your parents in spirit. Is that right? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes. Mm. Yes, I would say. And even what I find is in client sessions too, I have people come in that have crossed over with messages for my client as well.
Yeah.
I don't focus on that part of what I do, but I mean, it happens, as you know, you can't predict sometimes what shows up. So, yeah.
That's wonderful. Yes, exactly. I have mediumship as a sort of focal point of what I do because I guess because I do like to chat to individuals. Also, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. They're always interesting.
Yeah.
I had one little girl I worked on a few years ago whose parents had both passed away. And every single time I worked on her, they would both come in.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. They wanted to be part of me helping her.
Well, she probably carried on her relationship very almost consciously.
Yes.
Let's speak about when you were a child, do you recall having spiritual or psychic kind of experiences? Some people do recall them, some people don't. And do you have any stories that you can recall?
Well, I can't really say I remember having psychic experiences. Mm-hmm. I have a very deep connection to like sparkles and light. And as a child, I remember like sitting in the sunshine, having these like sparkles come through the window and just having those experiences. As a child, I come from a big family. I'm the youngest. Mm. And when I would get scared, I would hide in the closet.
I'm laughing because I did the same thing and I'm the youngest. So
I have six older brothers and an older sister. Ooh. So there was lots of like male energy in the house.
Yeah.
And so when I get overwhelmed as this little girl, I go hide in the closet. And I think that hiding in the closet kind of caused me to start going inward and like kind of exploring what was going on inside of myself. But as for like psychic experiences and seeing things and stuff, I don't really remember anything, you know, of that nature.
Well, I had imaginary friends and I didn't even occur to me that those were like, you know what I mean? Cause they're dismissed. Actually, they weren't dismissed. I have to give credit to my family that they actually honored my imaginary friends.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I mean, they thought I was cute. And although sometimes my elder sister would go and sit on one of them to, you know, poke fun, to tease me. And they were so real to me that it was like she was sitting on my friend. And so I would lose my shit. You know what I mean? Like, but they did honor them and they allowed me to talk to them and they called them by name and stuff like that. And of course, to this day, they are my spirit guides. And I know why I named them what I named them.
Yeah.
So I think I didn't put that in place for a while after I had my metaphysical opening that was mediumship apparently when I was a little kid because imaginary friends are a typical thing that are not considered to be spiritual for most people in like a kind of secular sense, but that going out in the inside, I mean, so you were basically doing the natural thing. It's what we now call meditation because we have to kind of have ourselves, we have to untrain ourselves from the disconnection and go into the inner world with, you know, within a specific and conscious way. But essentially what you're describing is, you were just in there connecting with your inner being and being, you know, doing that, being in that place, which is definitely a psychic thing.
In a way. And I even find now when I do it, it's almost like when I meditate, mm-hmm. I'm going back in my closet.
Oh,
it's nice and safe and it's, you know,
Well, that's
so I just started early on, I guess.
Definitely. It's like all of this is very natural. But when you say, I come from my first spiritual seeking paradigm was actually Christianity. And there's a Bible verse that talks about when you pray, go ye into your closet.
And oh, really?
Yes. Oh. Really beautiful. And maybe it meant your bedroom, but the word is closet. But it's that sacred inner communion. It's so powerful and so important.
It is.
And so,
especially in today's world.
Yes, and it's not boring. I want us to say that. It's not boring. Meditation isn't boring.
No.
It's actually the most amazing thing. We're talking about tripping with dimensions and sparkly, you know, it's everything. It's way more interesting than Netflix.
Yeah. And I get inspiration. I literally keep a pad of paper beside me when I'm meditating because things just pop into my head and And I make a quick note and I go back. It's amazing.
So how can people start to work with their own energy today? Would you recommend learning or reading or about the chakras a little bit or something like that? What are some pointers you might have?
I would say, well, I think meditation mm-hmm. is a really good place to start. The thing with meditation too is there's no rules. Mm-hmm. I know some people believe there are, but if you can find something, whether it's knitting, whether it's fishing, whether it's some meditative thing, you're getting yourself to that state. Mm-hmm. And when you're in that state, you're more likely to connect to your inner being and listen to your body. So I would say a good place for them to start would be to start some type of a meditative practice, mm-hmm. whatever that means to them, whether it's 5 minutes of sitting still, focusing on their breath, or it doesn't matter what it is, but start with that. Mm-hmm. And they could learn about the chakras, you know, do some reading, get some books. You know what? Heaven forbid, we've got Google at our fingertips. And there's tons of information out there. Start doing some reading. And you're going to find everything that you want to know, but use what works for you and use what resonates for you and let the rest go. You don't have to believe it the same way other people believe it. Find what's right for you.
Mm-hmm. So Barbara Brennan is someone that you mentioned, your teacher, and there is a book that I really love to use as a reference for chakras. It's really very much like a textbook. Anadeya Judith, always have to say.
Wheels of Life?
Eastern Body, Western Mind. Yes, Body, Western Mind. Because she has a lot of Jungian psychology that is, I really love too, that is sort of woven in to the development, the understanding of the chakras. And
yes,
I have that in hard copy. I have it in on a Kindle copy, and I also have it on audiobook because you can just play stuff like this and not have to over intellectualize it, but let it seep in and let the inspiration just strike you, and it works. Yeah, Kurt's putting up a picture of that book. I love it. And are there any other authors or podcasts? I know there's actually a podcast called My Seven Chakras. I think the host's name is AJ. I was actually on it probably 2 years ago.
Okay.
So, yeah, I haven't. So that might be a good sort of recommend another podcast to you all. Just come back to me too.
I'm kidding. I forget how to pronounce her name.
Anadeya Judith. Yes. Uh-huh.
She's also got another book called Wheels of Life.
Ooh. I wonder if that's newer than the Eastern Body, Western Mind.
I'm not sure.
I'll have to check it out.
I love her stuff. I've read it from front to back as well.
Yeah. Anyone else? Any other books that you would recommend for people to start with on their practice, or you know, whether it's the chakras or meditation or their inner communion?
I have bookcases full of books.
Oh, you're an author. How about let's talk about your book? Hello.
My book. Yes. Anadeya Judith. Uh-huh. Yes, that's the one I was talking about. That's a really good book for them as well. Mm-hmm. My book is about, well, I'm all about getting people to connect and listen to their own bodies and stuff. So my book is about how to get people to connect to their own heart. Mm. So basically it's full. I wrote it after my mom and dad passed away. Mm. And it's based on all the exercises I used to connect with myself again, because after that happens, there's a period where you feel very disconnected.
Yes.
Right? You feel lost. Yeah. And so when I was going through that and doing all the reading that I talked about before, I found all these ways to help myself. And so my book is based on all of these ways that people can start really paying attention, you know, noticing synchronicities in life. You know, I've got stuff in there about meditation. I've got little exercises that they could try. So it's full of exercises that people can really work with and start listening to their own bodies again. And it's almost a way to get them to feel into their heart, mm-hmm. I guess, for lack of a better word, you know, listening to words of songs, you know, what yeah. speaks to them, you know, like I said, the synchronicities, opening a book and noticing, okay, is this the right message for me? Mm. You know, just little things that they can do to start getting in touch with themselves again.
And tell everyone the title of your book.
Oh, the title is The Sweetest Thing, mm-hmm. Everyday Exercises to Easily Access the Wisdom of Your Heart. Mm-hmm. And one very interesting thing with this is I always set an intention before I go to sleep at night. Mm-hmm. And when I was writing my book, I needed a title for it. Mm-hmm. And so before I went to sleep, I set my intention, okay, I want to get guidance on a title for my book. And this is no word of a lie. In my dreams, I stepped into a glass elevator and Oprah Winfrey was in there, whom I love. And she had a book, a paperback book, and she didn't say a word to me. She held it open like this, sideways. It said, The Sweetest Thing.
Oh my God.
And I woke up in the morning, it's like, oh, I got the title for my book.
Oh.
So that's where my title came from. And the sweetest thing is that sweet spot that you yes. feel in your heart when you feel, you know, that love, that peace, that freedom. Mm-hmm. That's the sweetest thing. So that's kind of the background to that.
I love it. Oprah is your spirit guide.
Yeah.
She's a lot of people's yes. spirit guide.
I know. A lot of people's inspiration too.
Mm-hmm. Wow. What a beautiful story. I love that glass elevator. I'm going to have to
call it in sometime.
Yeah. I connect with Prince, and I actually begin the artist Prince, and I actually connected with him in dreams and astral travel before he passed even. And so as you're saying that, like you're telling the story, reminds me of my Prince encounters. And also, of course, in Let's Go Crazy, he's like, I'm not going to let the elevator get us down.
So yours had an elevator in it too.
Well, it had Prince, and he's not going to let the elevator break us down. Yeah. All right. Well, we are actually out of time. This has been so much fun. It always does. Yeah. We get in that zone. And so is there anything else you want to share with folks before we sign off today? And it's been such a pleasure to chat with you, and thank you for the work you're doing.
Thank you. I just want to share with them, you know what? Believe in yourself. Yes. Listen to your body. Trust your instincts. And you know what? You'll know. There is no right or wrong. Mm. There really isn't. Just explore and have fun.
I love it. Della Reside on Charmed Life, thank you so much again. And I look forward to reading your book and just staying in contact. Hopefully we can do this again sometime.
I would love to do that. Thank you.
And thank you everyone for tuning in. I love you, whoever you are.